From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Wall Street's in the doghouse. Big business is important, but hard to love. Everybody wants to throw their arms around small business, to praise and encourage and do the right thing by small business, the job creators, we're told. But what do small business people think about the economy, their role, what they need next? This hour, On Point, we sit down with our own small business roundtable, small business owners from around the country, and hear them out. Let's go to our small business panel. Out there every day trying to make a buck from Hanover, New Hampshire, Joan Ecker is here, founder and owner of FH Clothing Company, 12 employees, turning out all American-made women's clothing sold in boutiques around the country and at their own shop in Queechee, Vermont. Joan Ecker, welcome to On Point. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. It's an honor to be here.
Wonderful to have you.
You're my hero.
Oh, right back at you, small business person.
Thank you.
From Clarksville, Tennessee, Charles Faust Jr. is with us, president of the Clarksville Foundry, 24 employees today. He's the third generation of Fausts to run the company. It was started more than 150 years ago, made canon in the Civil War, now specializes in cast iron for architecture and manufacturing. Charles Faust, thank you so much for being with us today.
Hello, Tom. Thanks for having me.
I've got a little bone to pick with you about my great-great-uncle got shot in the foot at Vicksburg. Might have been one of your cannonballs. We can talk about that later. And with us from Charlotte, North Carolina, is Katie Tyler. She's founder and CEO of Tyler 2 Construction, a commercial building contractor, 26 employees. They build out office, retail, medical, industrial, and restaurant space, 15 million square feet of it over the years. Katie Tyler, welcome to On Point. Thank you so much for being here.
Hello, Tom. It's my pleasure.
All right. Let's see. Let's go first to job creation. Charles, are you a job creator these days or not in this economy?
Well, we're kind of holding our own. We've been at this 25-employee level for probably a couple of years now. That's where we found ourselves after the 2007 contraction.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing our best to create jobs, but right now we're working 40 hours a week and proud to be doing that.
We'll come back and look at what it takes to hold on to those 25 jobs and what it would take to maybe allow you to expand. Joan Ecker, what about you? Job creator right not? Treading water? Losing ground? what?
Well, we are certainly not losing ground. We are 12 employees. Mm-hmm. We've been this way for a long time. We contract out our cut-and-sew operation in New York to probably 30 other employees,
okay.
So I can't count them as my employees.
But they are jobs that are made
are
because of your activity.
There. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So we're holding our own, and actually we're doing quite well. But we're not creating new jobs locally.
But that's interesting. So you've got a core of a dozen that you employ directly, but presumably
right.
The number you hire to cut and sew for you would grow or shrink depending on business.
Well, also depending on whether skilled labor. If we had more skilled labor in the area, we might not be doing this in New York.
That's
interesting. We might be doing everything in Vermont.
Yeah. Katie Tyler, you're in construction. Are you a job creator these days or holding steady? How's it look, Katie?
We are creating jobs. We just hired a person that will start in January, and we actually have three positions that we need to hire, and I'm on the fence about it.
On the fence because what? You're putting your finger in the wind trying to figure out the economy, whether it will support those hires once you would make them?
If the increase in business that we're seeing right now is sustainable, that's my big question.
So you've got a little bump going on right now, but what? You don't know if that's part of a wave or just jobs that happen to come to you.
The construction industry portion that we're in, which is commercial interiors, mm-hmm. is very robust right now. It's about the only thing that's creating jobs in construction. We are very busy. We're working our people very hard on a reduced salary to make the numbers work. But we recognize that we need to add people to our business. We're just not sure it's going to last.
Now, that's interesting. Commercial interiors, very robust right now. That sounds, Katie, like a good signifier for where the economy might be going. If you've got restaurants and retail and commercial and all the rest building out, does it look to you like that may be a sign of some surge coming economically?
No. I think that this is where construction has moved.
Mm-hmm.
When we start building new buildings, that's when we're going to start seeing some real change in the industry.
And you're not in the home building end of the business, which has been so devastated.
That's correct. But I bet if you look in the home building industry, you'll find that the renovation work is strong.
Yes, no doubt. People, if they've got the cash, doing something with a house, not necessarily building new ones in big numbers. Let me take the temperature of all three of you on where you sense the economy going. If you're our windsock for today, Charles Faust in Clarksville, what's your gut? If you were called and polled on, you know, your confidence level in the economy regaining growth in the coming year or two, what would your response be, Charles?
Well, personally, I'm fairly encouraged. And I probably am not in a position to say if that's representative of the entire nation, but we're busy. We see a good, you know, forecast for the coming year and hopefully some growth.
So there's a positive read. Joan Ecker, how's it look from Queechee in Hanover?
Positive on this end also. We have a very loyal customer base. So we've been making clothing for 33 years, and we have stores and individual customers who look for what we make. And we have had a good year, up from last year. So I'm encouraged.
Did you take a hit with the contraction, the Great Recession of 08, 09, 10?
No. No, we somehow seem to be resilient. I think it's our sense of humor.
That never hurts. We're all for it. We're up for that. And Katie Tyler, we hear you sitting on the fence on these three new hires. What does that say about what you're anticipating, what you're feeling in the wind in terms of what's coming at us economically in the next year or two?
I don't expect any change in construction for many years to come. I think it's going to be very cutthroat, very reduced margins, and only the ones that have good reputation and are real smart and pay attention to their customers are going to survive. I think it's going to get worse before it gets better.
So a tough road ahead. You mentioned reduced salaries for your staff. What kind of percentage hit did they have to take to keep you in business and their jobs intact?
And 2 years ago, we came down from 2009 from 35 employees, and the ones that we had left, we said, this is our core group. The only way we're going to survive is if everybody takes a 10% cut. So everybody across the board took a 10% cut, and they've been that way for 2 years. And my goal for 2012 is not only to get them back, but also to make up what they gave up.
That would be great, though it's a long road you see ahead. Charles Faust in Tennessee, what about your team? Have you had to take cuts to keep everybody on board, or have you managed to hold steady on wages?
We have managed to hold steady, and we have scaled back on the amount of regular increases, but our core group is intact and strong, I think. In 2007, we cut back significantly, but have clawed our way back to one shift from a two-shift operation.
There's a lot I want to ask all of you about policy and perspectives, where we need to go. I want to talk about the president's speech in Kansas yesterday, the picture he paints, the picture that's painted in Washington on Capitol Hill by Republican leaders there. One of the big issues that's been on the table is the payroll tax cut that the people have been enjoying for a while now. It expires at the end of this year. Democrats put forward a proposal to keep that cut out there. They say for middle class families. Republicans responded negatively, in part, in one iteration anyway, because it would put a 3.25 or would have put a 3.25% surtax on people who made over $1 million. And Republicans came out saying this would hurt job creators and hurt the economy. Now, you guys get the tag of job creators. I don't want to pry too much, but Katie, let me start with you. If they tax people making, netting $1 million plus a year, would that be you, madam?
Unfortunately, no. I would welcome a 3.5% tax.
If you can have $1 million bucks, you're happy to pay the tax. Charles, Charles, is that you rolling in $1 million plus a year, small business job creator?
Not at all. Not at all.
Joan?
Oh, silly to ask that. No, I want to know who the 1% is that does touch. Well, I say there's 1% of small businesses that would touch. I want to meet that person.
So what do you think, Joan, when that's put out there as the rallying cry against – we'll see where you come down on the payroll tax, but on the, you know, don't touch, don't raise taxes on millionaire plus because you're going to ding the job creators. Does that add up to you, Joan?
Not at all. I mean, I don't even understand how someone like Norquist got any kind of power to be able to make everybody sign pacts on anything regarding the very wealthy not putting any money back in. This is a democracy. Everybody needs to help us grow. Everybody needs to help be part of this country. So I'm a little confused about all of that, and I don't understand who they're talking about, because it's certainly not me. although I am really a micro business, in, even compared to the other two on here, Katie and Charles.
Well, maybe it's a little bit bigger businesses. I don't know. I mean, the Treasury Department says about 1% of small business owners would be affected by the millionaire's tax, but only about less than a fourth or a fifth of those would qualify if you define small business owners as those earning at least 25% of their income through their firm. In other words, they may be small business owners, but maybe they've got a big hedge fund on the side. Charles, do you know small business owners who make more than $1 million in your circle, at your country club, sir, or wherever you hang?
No, sir, I don't. As far as I know, the small business folks that I associate with are pretty much in the same boat as me. We work hard, and we're nowhere close to $1 million income.
So there's the $1 million hurdle, and maybe that's not the one that our guest today and a lot of small businesses are jumping over, but we've got a lot of hurdles to get by as a country in our economy. Katie Tyler is with us today from Charlotte, North Carolina. She's got a construction company there, not for homes, but commercial spaces, in industrial, retail, mechanical, restaurant. They build those out. She's thinking about hiring three more employees on top of the 25, 26 that she's got right now. Charles Faust Jr. joins us from Clarksville Foundry in Clarksville, Tennessee. Been doing their work there since, well, way back before the Civil War, made cannon in the Civil War. Today, they specialize in cast iron for architecture and manufacturing, 25 employees. Joan Ecker is with us, FH Clothing in Queechee, Vermont. Eight employees there and a bunch of sewers and cutters down in New York working behind those, selling through boutiques and through her own store around the country. Joan, what kind of clothing do you make up there? What's it look like?
First of all, Tom, that's 12 employees.
Excuse me, 12.
I've got to hold on to all the ones I've got.
Oh, my gosh. We're not downgrading
you. Don't take any of those away from them.
The head count is secure. Okay, 12, 12, big 12.
We make very easy, comfortable, casual clothing for women. We started out years ago, 33 years ago, making hats that we now give away to chemo patients around the country as a gift. But we make easy-to-wear monochromatic clothing that women all over the country seem to love. So it's most of the clothing's knit clothing, knit in this country and mills in this country. There are no weaving mills that I know of in this country. So the one woven line we have is from a socially responsible business in the northwest corner of Turkey.
And do you compete on a price or on design? What's your competitive edge?
I think that we have. The reason why we're competitive and we're still alive is because we have a wonderful, easy-to-wear line of clothing, but our price points are moderate, and Made in America makes a difference. Mm. Made in Vermont really makes a difference.
Charles Faust, were you really making cannon back in the Civil War? Where were you shipping to back in the day?
Well, I'm told we were. I didn't have a personal stake at that point, but there's quite a bit of evidence that we did. Clarksville fell to the Union in 1862, so that was the only interruption in our operation, but we did produce cannon and machine cannon that were produced in Nashville at Brennan Foundry.
Mm-hmm. And describe some of the products that you make today, if you would, Charles.
We make components for other manufacturers, pumps, valves, air compressor components, parts for tire presses. It's a wide variety of other manufacturers that we service through components that they incorporate into their products.
How do you stay ahead of foreign competition? We think of that kind of thing as very vulnerable. What's your edge?
Quality and delivery. We're able to produce small quantities. That doesn't bother us a bit. Sometimes we have lead times of a week or 2 weeks. That's just part of what we offer as a service as well as the product. So I don't think you're ever going to import anything from China in a 1 or 2 week lead time.
Pretty tough, especially cast iron. You may not want to shove that in a FedEx envelope. Katie Tyler, what projects are you working on right now there in and around Charlotte?
We have several medical projects for a local hospital and also have a large dining hall at the local University of Charlotte.
Great. So there's the work. I want to get your perspective on perspectives that are being put out there on the economy. And the payroll tax, let's look at that first here. This was November 30th. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell said he was opposed to paying for an extension of the payroll tax cut with a surcharge on Americans earning over $1 million a year. Here's McConnell.
So we're not arguing against extending the payroll tax cut. We just think it shouldn't be punishing job creators to pay for it. And we think that if this kind of temporary relief engineered at some lawmaker's whim is the sum and substance of Democrats' plan for getting this economy going again, we're really in trouble.
If that's it, it's not enough. And don't punish job creators. Mitch McConnell on November 30th. Here's the president yesterday in Osawatomie, Kansas, hearkening back to Teddy Roosevelt, saying the country couldn't go back to what he called old policies of weak regulation and little oversight.
We simply cannot return to this brand of you're on your own economics if we're serious about rebuilding the middle class in this country. We know that it doesn't result in a strong economy. It results in an economy that invests too little in its people and in its future.
President Obama yesterday in Kansas. Now, I want to come to the payroll tax, but Katie, just on big perspective, what's resonating with you these days? You hear the president making his appeal. We've all heard and seen the Republican contenders for the presidency in their debates. You know, we're all in this together, or, you know, liberate us, take away the regulations, set us free. What resonates with you, Katie, as a small business person in Charlotte?
Well, I believe that the government does have a role in regulation. There are things that just cannot be done at the state level that have got to be looked at nationally. Environmental issues comes to the top of that list. But when it comes to encouraging small business to grow, the best thing the government can do is to govern and to give us some consistent policy to get out of debt, because honestly, there's no difference between us and Greece except that we can print money and they can't.
And we have a little less debt as a percentage of GDP at this point, but who knows down the road?
Who knows?
Have you?
I personally don't believe that the sales tax holiday, the Social Security rebate, whatever you want to call it, payroll tax is going to do anything one way or the other, nor do I believe that 3.5% at the top end is going to significantly make a difference.
So President Obama says, you know, that would put maybe $1,000 in the pocket of a lot of American middle class families. Some economists say that's important, that much cash in the economy to keep it rolling in this next year. You don't buy it?
No, sir, I don't. When that tax holiday came in for our company, we actually had to point it out to our employees. We're, of course, on direct deposit, which a lot of people are, so you don't get that paycheck in your hands.
Mm-hmm.
But we actually had to point out to people that it had been implemented, and I doubt if it went away that they'd even notice.
The few bucks every week or every month, they might not know. Of course, cumulatively, it could add up to something, but maybe not. And on the tax side, you don't think that would make a difference either, Katie, in terms of
no, sir, I do not.
Crimping millionaires or anybody as job creators?
No, we've got to do a combination of cuts and taxing to get out of this. And we need to have our leadership stand together, make a decision, stick to it so that we can build on something that's got some consistency to it.
If you were going to vote today, Obama versus, I don't know who it's going to be, Romney or Gingrich, or we'll see, on the GOP side of the ticket, where do you think you'd put your ex?
I'd probably do a write-in for Katie Tyler for president.
There's a small business attitude from the ground up. Charles Faust, how about you on the different perspectives that are being offered to Americans as we head into 2012 here? The president's yesterday in Kansas, we're all in this together. We've got to, you know, we'll rise or fall together. Republicans set us free as individuals to build and do and grow.
Well, you know, these are complicated questions.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no easy answers. But the thing that strikes me right now is the government appears to be almost dysfunctional because they can't agree on the smallest thing. And we've got to look at both sides of the coin, the revenue and the expense. And we've got to strike some compromises. Nobody's going to be happy with the solution. But until we can start talking across the aisle, we're in trouble.
Katie says cut and tax to get things into a better order. Would you agree or not?
I would, absolutely.
What about, are you confident Democrats would make the cuts we need? Are you confident Republicans would be willing to ask for some taxes to get the ledger back closer to balance?
I don't have a lot of confidence in either one of them.
And what about the payroll tax exemption for another year, Charles? Are you for it, against it? Does it matter to you business-wise?
I'm like Katie. I'm not sure it's going to make a lot of difference. I'd be happy to have that extra 3.5% in my pocket, and I'm sure my employees would as well. But in the big picture, I don't know that that's really going to be a be a major factor.
Joan Ecker, what about you on the Obama perspective yesterday in Kansas, on Mitch McConnell and the GOP perspective on our economy, on our national economic and future? How do you look at them?
It's a lot to ask in one little
yes,
question.
Yes, it is.
In the last go-around, what confuses me is the Republicans wanted to pay for this tax break for the tax extension on payroll taxes, not with a surcharge on the wealthy, but they wanted to do a freeze on federal employee pay through 2015. And first of all, aren't they federal employees? Are they federal? Why? Then that would be good because mm-hmm. it would be on them also, which mm-hmm. would be really nice and maybe make everybody think for a minute. And they also wanted to put a reduction on federal workforce of 10%. I agree with Katie and with Charles about the fact that I'm not sure how much the 3.2% discount is noticed by employees, although I know every penny does count. Mm-hmm. But I do think the new proposal by Susan Collins and Claire McCaskill is interesting because it does expand and further cut the payroll tax to the 3.1%, but it mm-hmm. also extends it to the employer, which is me. And I could maybe hire somebody else if I had a little more money in the coffers. So if the goal is to create jobs, I think that the idea that the employer would get a discount would be good. And I know the Republicans reject this because they say that it's going to be a 2% tax mm-hmm. that would destroy small businesses. But again, who are those small businesses making, adjusted gross income of $250,000? There can't be, 1%. So I think we have to start thinking bigger. How many people will this be a benefit for? And I think that this combination that they've come up with, this new proposal, is interesting and worth considering.
This is a kind of split the difference proposal between a Republican and a Democratic senator.
Right.
Joan Ecker, Charles Faust, Katie Tyler, stand by. I've got lots of callers, and I want to invite them into our round table here, if I may. Debbie in Plattsburgh, New York. Debbie, thanks for calling. You're on the air. What do you know? Hello, Debbie, are you there? Oh, Debbie?
Hello.
Hello,
yeah.
Debbie. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you know there?
I can hear you. You couldn't hear me. I am an owner, along with my mother and brother, of a staffing agency in Plattsburgh, New York.
Okay. Like this is a hiring, like a temporary hire kind of thing? Or?
Yep. We do a lot of that. We do a lot of permanent placement. We we run the gamut. There's a lot of Canadian manufacturers in this area, and we do a lot of work with them.
How's it going?
It's going great. The second half of the year, we are exploding. It's going fabulously. First half of the year wasn't so great, and we tend to be a leading indicator in the staffing agency, staffing business.
Right. What does that tell you, Debbie, about where the economy's headed?
Well, now I'm a bit of a pessimist. I'm very concerned that we're going to go right back to Republican, ridiculous policies of, cut taxes on the job creators. And I agree completely with everyone on your panel. I mean, our philosophy in this business has been, hey, if we're paying taxes, that means we're making money. And, we're not in that taking home $1 million a year bracket. So
But why do you say ridiculous? Do you think that, at some point, do higher taxes crimp your hiring? Or way you're gauging it?
No, never. I never sit here and think, well, gosh, if my taxes were lower, maybe I could hire someone. Or, gosh, I've got this big pile of cash. Maybe I'll just hire someone. We hire people when we need something done.
And what kind of job?
If we have to borrow money to do it, we'll do it.
Well, lucky you if you can borrow. But what kind of jobs are you sending people out to do with your staffing agency?
Everything. Secretarial, light industrial, pick pack, everything. We even have a healthcare division.
Okay, we'll take that. We'll take that as a note of optimism there, though it's interesting that even with that going on, you're still nervous about things turning the other way. But I appreciate your call, Debbie. One more right here, Carver, Massachusetts. Scott, you're on the air.
Hello, Mr. Ashbrook. Hi. I've been listening intently to your panel. I disagree with their optimism. I own a small vending business in the Carver, Massachusetts area. And if anything, I used to have 30 people, now down to 10. A lot of factories have disappeared because, as you know, we don't manufacture anything anymore. I disagree. I think that Wall Street has destroyed Main Street. Wall Street has decimated the middle class. All of America's depression, and I don't use the word recession, the depression that America finds itself in now, all stems from the greed from Wall Street. And when I was doing better, I had some money. I invested some money in Lehman Brothers. I lost $190,000. I was swindled.
Ow. Oh, sounds like Scott is gone. Let me get one more right here. Serena, West Palm Beach, Florida. Serena, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I own my own business as an independent rep for a growing company fitting women for bras and selling undergarments, and we're on a party plan model.
Like Tupperware party, that kind of thing, you mean?
Correct. I am the South Florida bra lady, and we're just getting started here. And even in the recession, every woman needs a good undergarment, even to improve the wardrobe she currently has. So it's been going really well.
Going well. So when you throw a party to buy some new undergarments, you get good turnouts?
Pardon?
Do you get a good turnout for those parties when you throw them?
Well, I don't even need... Yes, I do at the parties, but I even just put advertising right on my car, and no matter which parking lot I pull into, somebody's always finding it eye-catching, asking me for my card, asking me, and I do churches, do, you know, local clubs, because everybody wants to be able to provide this for their friends even. It's amazing. It's amazing how it's taken off. It's so exciting that you really can have a job, that you can work from home like I do. It's really been wonderful.
Do you have a sense, Serena, that you're selling to middle-class American consumers or to, you know, hoity-toity class, or who's your customer?
That's an excellent question. I started with my nail salon, and so people who had formerly been doing my nails for me, thank you and God bless them, are now my customers and my clients. And they needed a well-fitting bra because even if they were going to keep the rest of their wardrobe, they knew something was wrong, you know, in their presentation underneath. So they look fabulous now, and they're my best advertisement. The first and still the best. So I would have said middle class if I didn't know that people have reached out to me and been really excited about the product.
South Florida bra lady, Serena, yeah. Selling there. Appreciate your call. Joan, if the bras are selling in South Florida, can the clothing orders be far behind?
This is a note from the fat hat lady to the bra lady. Fat hat is FH Clothing Company. I think her business is doing well for the same reason mine probably is. I mean, people do need clothing, and they want to look nice. I'm not so naive that I think that the economy is fabulous everywhere. I think we have a million problems. And I think the division politically in this country is a nightmare. That's what I think we have to work on, figuring out how to come to a common ground places all along the way.
I want to come back and look in a cool-headed way at Wall Street, Main Street, and the tension that's been there lately. Joe Necker, Charles Faust, Katie Tyler, our Small Business Roundtable. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking today with our own national small business roundtable that we've put together with business people from around the country to look with small business owners at the U.S. economy and political approaches out there, different philosophies being offered right now, how they see our options, our opportunities from in the trenches. Here was the president yesterday in Osawatomie, Kansas, where Teddy Roosevelt spoke 100 years ago, saying the nation faced important choices in how to move forward.
This isn't about class warfare. This is about the nation's welfare. It's about making choices that benefit not just the people who've done fantastically well over the last few decades, but that benefits the middle class and those fighting to get into the middle class and the economy as a whole.
Not about class warfare, about the nation's welfare. We'll look at that. Ronnie in Montgomery, Alabama. Thanks for calling, Ronnie. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. Something that your panel said kind of got me thinking a little bit and riled just a little bit. All of them said that the payroll tax holiday, basically the less taxes withheld, don't make a difference, and they don't think it will make a difference. I tell you, as an employer and for a tax credit, I make a difference in $1,200 to $1,500. Are there employers or employees making enough money where $1,500 doesn't make a difference? You take that times how many employees are in this country, we're talking about, you know, billions of dollars. It will make a difference, and it does make a difference to everybody out there, unless you're making enough money where, like one of your panel said, she had to point it out to her employees. I'm like, they don't notice a $1,500 difference, $1,200 difference in their paycheck?
I guess you've got to add it up to see what it adds up to, but when you put it that way, $1,000 or $1,500, certainly does not sound like nothing. We'll look at that, Ronnie. Let me get one more right here. Thanks for your call. Hebron, Connecticut, Rick is calling. Rick, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Pretty well. What do you know, Rick?
Well, I'm a small business man. I own a contracting company in Hebron. We're very small, six guys, core guys, been with me a long time. My dad started the business about 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We are doing very well. We're busy. We're working 6 days a week, nine-hour days, but in trade for that, we've had to trade profit margins. We're working on single digits, and like the woman that's on your panel had said, it is dog-eat-dog, and I'm wondering if there's loyalty. But the complaint that I have is that throughout my dad's business, he's never laid anybody off, ever. My company has never laid anybody off.
Okay.
My unemployment compensation has gone up over 100%, my insurance compensation.
Mm-hmm.
Regulatory restrictions on small businesses such as ours, where we have to do continuing education, sit through classes, and basically learn things that we already know, that we've been in business for 35 years. I mean, they're pulling my guys out of work, and it's costing my company money to do that.
Is that a state regulation or federal, Rick? I mean, what kind of classes are they required to go to be on a construction crew?
Well,
safety?
My company holds electrical licenses, HVAC licenses, construction and demolition licenses. So the contracting licenses, plumbing and electrical, those are required that we do yearly continuing education, something that our state's legislature put through, and it's basically been a burden to us.
Does it not keep them kind of up to date on new products, new ways of doing things, or you don't think it's worth it?
Well, no, Tom, because in reality, the fact of the matter is that electrical and plumbing is kind of a pinpoint industry where you're not going to know everything about everything anyway. And a good electrician that or electrical contractor or plumbing contractor that's been in business for years is going to be able to keep up pace with the type of work that he does. It's like specializing in medicine. One doctor doesn't know everything about everything.
Yep.
So for me to sit there and ask doctors to sit down and, you know, a neurosurgeon to sit down and learn something about cardiology, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Hey, Rick, let us pick it all up, and I appreciate your call very much. Joan, let me come first to you with the with unemployment. And, you know, Rick says we don't lay off, but paying the unemployment insurance is a burden for the company. Now, we all understand why we need unemployment for people who can't find work, but what about the way it works, Joan?
Well, I wanted to say that the guy from Hebron, I agree that this $1,500 probably does make a huge difference to my employees. But as far as a stimulus for the economy, I'm not sure that it's doing more than helping pay the increased costs in car gas and heating fuel. So I don't know how that's stimulating the economy.
Okay, net.
So
yeah,
that's
okay.
Yeah. Workman's comp is going up. It's very difficult to pay it. And I think that it's hard if you have to – I have not let go of an employee. We've kept employees for many years. If somebody has quit or gone by and they apply for unemployment compensation or unemployment compensation, there need to be some restrictions on whether you're sitting home doing nothing, not getting a job, just collecting money. And as a liberal, that's hard for me to say.
Mm-hmm.
But also I think that it's necessary if you're a hardworking person, and it should extend as long as it has to in order to help you find a job in this tough market. It's a really tough combined problem that is – a lot of it depends on honor and your morality, whether you're actually using the funds for the right reasons while you're sitting home, if you're really looking for a job. And I think the burden on the small business owner is high in that regard with workman's comp and unemployment compensation.
Charles Faust, how do you look at unemployment these days? A lot of people have been on it for a long time now. Jobs are scarce and hard to find. A whole lot of it could, you know, vanish at the end of this year if it's not renewed. What about the weight it puts on you? Do you think that's a necessary thing for American small business? And what about the way it's used?
Well, I think there's certainly some abuses of the system. Our premiums have gone up, and it's not entirely based on whether or not an employer lays off or doesn't lay off, but that's how insurance works.
Mm-hmm.
It spreads the burden out.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's necessary, but it's difficult to say what the solution is.
Katie Tyler, what about regulation? Our caller Rick, you know, doesn't want to have his guys going off to sit in plumbing and electrical classes every year. Whether it's that or you name the angle, there's been a lot of complaining that regulation has been too heavy. It's been in the way of sparking growth again. How does that sound to you, Katie?
Obviously, there are regulations that have to be in place. Interesting thing about the caller who called in about contracting is we've actually been trying to get the state of North Carolina to require continuing education for contractors. North Carolina does not.
Mm-hmm.
Our industry changes. There are new things that go on all the time, from contractual items or liability items. So keeping yourself informed, I think, is important. And I don't think that people necessarily would do it without some regulation. Do I believe they're all necessary? No. But I'm a believer in some regulation, yes.
There's been a lot of complaint from the GOP during the Obama administration that the Obama administration in particular is drowning the country in regulation. Now, you can look at the numbers. I saw David Brooks, conservative, in the New York Times doing that yesterday and saying, well, not really. It's pretty much in the same scale of regulation as other presidents, more or less. What's your personal experience, Katie? Have you felt a new wave of regulation in the Obama years or steady as she goes?
The only way I've felt it is in my relationship with my financial institution and the things that they require of me to renew our line of credit or to reapply for loans or to refinance my house. That's where I've seen an incredible increase in paperwork and things that I think are unnecessary.
What are you thinking as you go through that? This is the price we have to pay not to have another debacle on Wall Street, or this could be more intelligently done?
What I'm thinking is if you guys had done this 5 years ago, we wouldn't be here now.
Mm-hmm. Charles Faust, what about the complaints about Wall Street and the sort of balance of power between Wall Street and Main Street, how the financial quarter or quadrant of our economy has dealt with the rest? What are you thinking about that these days?
Well, I agree with Katie that it seems some of the washback from the meltdown of Wall Street has engulfed the rest of us in new regulations that we haven't seen or been used to, and it certainly has tightened credit up. It seems as though it's not possible to get a loan unless you really don't need a loan.
Of course, part of that tightening is because the economy's been so bad, banks are afraid they don't know who they can give the money to, where it will be certain to come back to them.
Well, certainly. Complicated questions.
Yeah. Joan, how about the Wall Street, Main Street balance here and power? How Washington works for or against small business people as opposed to, you know, great big financial institutions?
Well, remember, please, Tom, that out of the three of us, I'm the smallest business.
Yes,
I live
12,
in the smallest.
12.
12. There you go. Good work. I live in the smallest area, and I'm lucky. I'm a Vermonter, and New Hampshire, Vermont are both the states that I do business in bank-wise. And I have to say, because I've been around for so long, there are some benefits to that. I have not had a problem with refinancing or with getting credit lines of credit. Not that my business is so fabulous, but I happen to live in an area where I think that, you know, it's like it used to be in the olden days. You know, they know me. They know the business. And I have not noticed a change. Again, I'm not doing a lot of things with regulations that both Katie and Tom or Charles are doing. So I think that it's a little different for me.
Sounds like you're still in Mayberry there.
It's ridiculous. I don't mean to sound like a Pollyanna, but I don't notice these, or maybe I'm just blind to it all.
I'm glad it's working. Dave in West Liberty, Iowa. Dave, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I am on my way back, actually, to my business in New Ulm, Minnesota.
Okay.
And I've been down in Indiana and Ohio. I lost my job back in, actually, late 2009, and it's 58 years old. I was pretty much sure I wasn't going to be able to find a job, so I started my own plumbing and heating wholesale house.
Brave man. How's it going?
Pardon me?
How's it going, Dave?
Every day is a struggle. I have nothing in my warehouse, period, that comes from any other place than either Canada, with only two items that come from there, and everything else is made in the United States. I believe in Made in America, and I do everything I can to not buy anything made in Asia, period. Not that they don't have good products, probably, but we need to put people to work in this country.
Can you compete with America made only?
Shipping jobs out.
Can you compete that way, Dave? Can you compete with American only made products?
It's difficult at best, but if you go to the Veterans Administration and to the federal government, the Act of 2009, Reinvest in America, requires them to buy as much made in America as they can, which puts me in a pretty good shape that way. I'm actually selling as far southeast as Asheville, North Carolina, up to Hampton, Virginia, Dayton, Ohio, Chillicothe, Ohio,
wow.
Marion, Indiana. So, you know, I'm getting there, but it's a tough business to get into. And I do quite well in, you know, a couple of things, and you have to pick a niche when you're doing this because mm-hmm. you'll go upside down if you don't.
Yeah, and doing it with American-made products, a couple from Canada, but the rest in the USA. Dave, it's good to hear that. We also hear that it's a struggle, and we wish you luck with it there. That's a long drive to sell, but you're doing it. One more here, Nashville, Tennessee. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hey, I just wanted to mention something that I think is really germane to the public discourse on the issue of letting the upper echelon tax cuts expire. And that is that, you know, the politicians, when they're speaking of this, particularly those who are opposed to that, allowing that to expire, always invoke the term small business as a way of getting the blood to boil of people who perceive small business as being their friends and neighbors who have the businesses similar to the folks on your panel there today.
Yes.
When, in fact, the definition of small business in the United States is quite different than what most people understand it to be. In general, it is a business of 500 or fewer employees.
Yeah, yes, it is.
Although that can vary from industry to industry. They mm-hmm. complicate it as much as they can, as the government is inclined sometimes to do. I think it's important for people to understand that definition so that, yeah, there are people who will, at the upper echelons of small business, be affected by the by that tax increase that would occur with the elapsing of those cuts. But in general, they shouldn't take it so internally. It's not their friends and neighbors. It's people they don't know who actually are making a lot of money but still defined as small business.
Yeah, bear that in mind. It's 500 employees or less in most or many industries, and that can get pretty large compared to 25 or 26 or 12. Charles, step back for a second. Give us your big view here. Here we are, United States of America, tough economy, tough world economy, though some countries are doing well. 2011, what's it going to take to get us off the dime and going again, Charles? And what's your confidence level that it will happen?
Well, clearly the playing field has changed. There's a whole different set of circumstances with goods coming from China and mm-hmm. other places. We've got to keep Americans working. And small business, it seems to me, is the way to do that. Anything the government can do in terms of encouraging investment in property, plant, and equipment for small businesses is going to result in jobs if the market's there. And if we can keep people with the mentality of Buy American, I think we can get through this. But it's going to take an effort on all parties and some compromise.
If you had to put an X today, Obama, Romney, Gingrich, Katie says she'll vote for herself. How about you, Charles?
I'm not prepared to commit at this point. I'm still watching.
Hanging back. Joan, what do you think it's going to take to get the economy going, get small business and really lined up for glory here?
Well, one, I think we have to be a little more confident in our government and in this political infighting. It's just insane and embarrassing, and now with Trump back in, I mean, it's almost like a joke, and yeah. I think that it's way more serious than the joke they're putting out there. Mm-hmm. I was wondering, what if if 20% of all the products and services from these large corporations had to be procured in this country in order to for a corporation to trade on the stock exchange? Maybe that would make a difference in order for them to receive tax incentives. Maybe that would make a difference. But I think that you have to somehow do something to encourage this kind of strong-willed businesses, even 500 employees, to stay in this country and make a living for their employees. You got to have a political field and a political climate that's inducive to that.
Get the act together. A lot of ways of doing that, but you give us a lot of nuance and coloring on how that might happen today. Joan Ecker with FH Clothing in Queechy, Vermont. Joan, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. You forgot to ask me who I would vote for, and the answer is Obama.
Okay. There's one. There's an X in a box. Katie Tyler at Tyler 2 Construction. Thank you, Katie.
My pleasure, Tom. Have a good day.
You too. Charles Faust, thank you so much for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.